So we are picking up where we left off last week. We're talking about Exodus. We're going through, last week we got through the Red Sea, and this week, remember, so where do you go from there? It's my videographer is signaling that I need to turn on my light. All right. All right, we don't want to have to do this sermon over again, make you all come back. All right, so this week we're actually talking about a really important topic. It's deliverance. How many of you know that movie? Yeah, repent, all of you. That's a no. All right, just don't go watch that movie like Netflix. And Pastor Grace told me to watch Deliverance. Don't tell anybody I said that. It's a very weird movie. But anyway, so we're talking about deliverance, but not that one. We're talking about deliverance and redemption. So we're picking right where we left off. They just crossed through the Red Sea, and they got to the other side. And this moment in the Bible is a famous moment. It's actually referenced so many times in the Old Testament and also in the New Testament, this concept of deliverance and redemption. And they're not the same thing. So I want to take a moment before we move on to the next part of the story. I want to pump the brakes here. I want to stop to make sure we catch what this means, the deliverance and redemption part. So we're going to go on from that, and I'm going to give you a couple scriptures that the prophets talk about. They point back to this moment, and they use it to describe this. So Jeremiah describes deliverance, and he says this: "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I made a covenant with your forefathers in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt." That actually can be translated, delivered them from the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. So Jeremiah uses this to talk about deliverance. Isaiah uses it to talk about redemption. He says, "Thus says the Lord, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be scorched, for I am the Lord your God." Isaiah is talking about redemption. So I know what everybody's thinking. So what? You know, redemption, deliverance, there's kind of these theological wonky terms, you know. I'll take meaningless Jewish trivia for $500, Alex. What? Why are we spending our time? Why would I care about this? I don't know if you knew this, Pastor, but we live in the land of the free. I don't care about this whole slavery and bondage thing because I'm not a slave. And I've never been a slave, so this is kind of interesting, I guess, as a history lesson. But how does it apply to me? I need you to stay with me here because this very definitely applies to you. But if you feel like it doesn't apply to you and I'm not a slave, so why do I care? You need to know you're not alone. In fact, if you jump ahead in the Bible all the way to the New Testament, Jesus is talking to a bunch of Jews, and he says this to them: "If you continue in my word, then you're my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Now, I want you to see what these Jews turn and say to Jesus. The next thing they say is, "We're Abraham's descendants. We've never been anyone's slave. I don't know what you're talking about, Jesus. And how is it you now say you're going to make me free? We've never been slaves." Okay, this is the great-great-grandchildren, the people who were bought in bondage in Egypt. Of course they've been slaves. In fact, if you follow them through the Old Testament, they're slaves all the time. They're saying, "Hey, we're not slaves." That's a natural reaction. "Hey, we're not slaves." And in fact, I think that we know Jesus is the Son of God because people say these stupid things to him. He doesn't reach out and smack the taste out of their mouth. Because sometimes, you know, I think Jesus must just like, he just has so much patience. Jesus is so good at that. But of course they've been slaves. But that's not even what he's talking about here. That's not what he's referring to. He's referring to a different kind. "Truly I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave of sin." And that everyone, by the way, includes Spirit Chapel, congregation, and 2015. Now, again, you might be saying, "Man, that's a little harsh. You know, I think that's maybe a little bit too far, Jesus. Yeah, I do some things I shouldn't do. I get that. Okay, I'm not perfect. Okay, I get that. But I wouldn't say I'm a slave to the sin. I just do some stuff I shouldn't. That's all. You know, I'm not a great guy, but I'm a pretty good guy. This is what I am. That's all. I'm not a slave." So to that I would say, let's try a little experiment here. Let's try something. In your mind, if just think about this. I gave you all a piece of paper, and I say, "Here's what you want you to do. I want you to draw a line down the center of the piece of paper. And on the left-hand side, I want you to write this column: things I do that I wish I wouldn't. And on the right-hand side, write this: things I'm not doing that I probably should." And then start filling it out. Now, I don't know what your list would look like. And by the way, this is not my list. I showed this last night. People said, man, how are you the pastor? Look at that list. Yeah, I'm just kind of getting you started here. I'm giving you some ideas for some things that might be on your list. Not necessarily this is on my list, right? But, like internet porn, cussing, getting drunk, getting wasted. Not the same thing. Very close. But those of you who've done both know the difference. Okay? Bad moods. Some of you are laughing because you know what I'm talking about, right? Bad moods, angry, slutty stuff. That's not gender specific, by the way. Guys can do that too. Smoking, losing weight. Just some of these things that's on that list, right? These things that, man, I really shouldn't do these things, but I do. Or what about the other side of it? If I'm a student, those students, I should study more. I don't. I should. I don't. I could work better. I could be better for my, I know I could work better, harder. Maybe that church thing, spend some time with, fill in the blank. This is on my list. Next one, exercise. My wife puts that on my list. That's why it's on my list. Eat better, So, you have this list, right? I mean, if you're honest with you, you could fill it up. You could fill up both sides of that. So, now my question is, why? You're a grown-up, right? I'm talking to adults here. And you're a grown man, you're a grown woman. Why can't you stop? Why is that? So, well, it's a habit. Really? Because, I have this habit. And I have it. This is a weird habit. I work, my job, I work with computers. And so I have a tendency to rest my hand and tap my mouse when I'm thinking. I don't know why I do it, but I do it. But I've got a bruise right here on my wrist, right? So I do that, it hurts. So guess what? I don't do that anymore, not until this heals. I just stop doing that because I'm a grown-up. I don't have to do that. I have control over that, don't you? Don't you have control over these things? If you have control over these things, then why are you still doing them? See, Jesus is saying, here's why, because you don't have control of them, because you're a slave. And when you're a slave, you do what the master says. And you don't have control over this, something else does. And that's what he's telling you. He's saying, you're a slave to it. You can't stop it because you don't own it. And you don't own you. And what I'm telling you is, you need to be free of it. Now, if that's a little depressing to you, you're not alone. In fact, let me show you another guy. Now, this is Paul. This is the Apostle Paul. Now, he's one of the most holy men that we hear about in the Bible. This is a true story. He actually, when he was working, because he was like me, he was bivocational. I love Paul. He's bivocational. He had a full-time job, plus he preached. And when he was working, sometimes he would wipe his brow with a rag and put it aside, and someone would pick that rag up and take it to another village where somebody was sick, and they lay that rag on that person, they'd be healed. That is holy. When your sweat's holy, you're holy, right? So this is the Apostle Paul now, and this is what he wrote. He says, "For what I am doing, I do not understand. For I am not practicing what I would like to do, but I am doing the very thing that I hate." Hey, Paul has that list. Paul has a list with his things too, he's telling us. Now that's really depressing almost though, right? Because we hope Paul wouldn't have a list. We hope that he would be better than that. We hope that he's not like we are, stuck in sin and crying out to the mountain.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That's when we find ourselves in this sin, we just wish we could quit it somehow. Horrible movie, by the way. Yeah, I see some of you, what is that from? Don't tell them. Horrible movie. But that's a real sentiment. The reason this caught up in American culture is because I think we've all had times like that. We just wish we could quit it. It's sin, and we know it's sin. We wish we could quit it. But we can't seem to quit it. Why is that? How come the Apostle Paul himself has this problem? How could that be? Well, we have to understand this idea of redemption and deliverance, because redemption's immediate, but deliverance takes time. And for some of you, that's going to be an encouragement today, because you feel like you're just not even saved because the deliverance hasn't been completed yet. But the Bible talks about God remakes us from the inside out, and he perfects us. Not he makes us perfect like that, but over time, he will perfect us. All right? So some of you, I hope you can take some solace in that, and some of you maybe need to rethink this whole idea of slavery. But I'm going to come back. So first, let's take a look at redemption. The word redemption literally means to be set apart, because of a price paid. Now, the best example I can give you that is something that happened about 3 years ago in West Virginia. Some of you know this guy. This is our dog. Doesn't look like this anymore. His name's Ninja, right? So this is not the only time he's licked her in the mouth, by the way. This is the first time he licked her in the mouth. So, he let her have it, and it was just, oh, this cute, sweet little puppy, right? And we look at that tongue. And so we decided we're going to get him, and so we told them, yes, we'll take this one. God help us all. We'll take this one. He was one of eight. And they put a little tiny collar on him, and they set him apart while we went to the ATM, got money, and came back and paid for him and signed a paperwork that said he's ours, right? So we paid a price, and he was set apart for us because of the price that was paid. That's redemption. Now for you, it looks like this. In him, in Jesus, we have redemption through his blood. See, Jesus paid a price for you. He paid a price for you with blood. And because of that, you are free, right? You have been redeemed. That's what redemption means. He paid a price, and you're free from the slavery of sin. Now, getting out of bondage is a process, but the freedom starts immediately, right? Deliverance is different. Deliverance means to literally draw someone to you. When I was in Texas, I crewed on a Pearson Flyer. It's a sailboat, and we used to do races and things. And I ran the foredeck with two other people, which means that we were human ballast. Because what happens in a boat, when you start going towards weather, they call it, when you're going towards the wind, the boat heels over on its side. And you want that, and you want that as tight as you can get it, but you don't want to flip the boat. So the foredeck people would run up to the top of the boat and hang off the end, right? Because we were ballast to keep the thing from flipping over, which is a really cool place to be because the wind's blowing and the waves splashing. But sometimes it got wet and you slipped and whoop, off you go into the water. Now, when that happened, we had this life preserver attached to a rope, and we would throw it behind you and you'd grab it. And once you had it around you, we would pull you back into the boat. That's deliverance. Right? So if you picture God has put a life preserver around you and he is pulling you towards him, that's deliverance. Redemption's immediate. Deliverance is a process. God pays for us first, and then he pulls us towards him. So if we go back into Israel and we go back to where we were in the Red Sea, we have to understand that there was this process here. And the thing we have to understand about bondage is it has three layers. And sometimes we only think about the physical because that's what's bugging us. Right? If you're a physical slave, that's what's really bothering you. And so you think, I need out of this, right? Or if you're caught up in an addiction, I wish I weren't drunk all the time. I wish I could quit the drugs. I wish I could stop doing the internet porn stuff. There's some addiction that's got a hold of you and it's physically got a hold of you and you want out of it. So we think about the physical. Right, and some of us have been to programs that they're created here on earth and created by good men who've come up with this way of getting out of the physical addiction. Some of you have done like a 12-step program or something, and that gets you out of the physical addiction. The problem is it stops there. And you know this because if any of you have been to an AA meeting or anything, what's the very first, and some, even those of you who haven't been, you've seen them on TV, right? You walk in, and I'd walk in, I'd say, hi, my name's Mark, and everybody say, hi, Mark. And then I would say, I'm an alcoholic. That's how it'd start. I'm not delivered. I'm still an alcoholic, right? What Jesus is saying is, I'm going to deliver you. I'm not going to just get you to a point. I'm going to get you all the way through this. I'm going to work through the physical, the emotional, but most importantly, I'm going to deal with the spiritual. Because that's where it all is. That's the truth of it all. Then we don't see that. So you can say later, hi, I'm Mark, and I'm a child of the one true king, instead of I'm an alcoholic. See, this is what Jesus' plan is. I'm going to take you all the way through this and all the way to the other end. So this is the process out, physical, emotional, and spiritual. Now, if you remember way, way, way back when, several weeks ago for some of you, we were talking the early part of Exodus when they finally literally kicked the Israelites out of Egypt. So first they're grabbing onto them, and then God kills the firstborn of every Egyptian. They said, get out, just go. And they say, look, get out of here. If they stay, we're all going to be dead. So they're literally putting gold in their hands and they're pushing them out. So they are now free. The Israelites are completely free from physical bondage. But that's not all that they're in bondage to. They're also emotionally in bondage, and they're also spiritually in bondage, and they're carrying that with them. They're not out yet. They're physically gone, but they're not out yet. And we see that because as soon as Pharaoh comes after them, the sons of Israel look, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. And the sons of Israel cried out and said to Moses, is this not what we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? We're slaves. We'll always be slaves. We deserve to be slaves. How many of you have done that with your addiction? I'm a drunk. I'll always be a drunk. I don't deserve to be anything but a drunk. I guess this is just me. This is who I am. I guess I need to learn to live with this. Whatever your personal sin is, I don't know what it is. I have mine. You know, you have yours. Whatever it is, I just can't quit it. So I guess this is who I am. Right? And we kind of try to embrace who we are. And because we're not emotionally out, in our mind, we're still in slavery. Nothing has changed. The Israelites are still very much emotionally still slaves. We must fix our eyes on the one who delivers us if we want to get out of this. And the only way that we're going to let the process take us through is we have to fix our eyes on our deliverer. And that's what Jesus is always telling us. He's saying, stop worrying about this and that. Stop looking left and right. I need you to fix your eyes on me. I want you to see me and stay focused on me. And I'm going to pull you through this. If you remember that passage from Jeremiah, he says, I made a covenant with you. That's a promise. In fact, that's a promise sworn by God himself. Unbreakable. A covenant is a promise from God. He says, I can't break my promises. I made a promise with you the day I started pulling you out of your slavery, and I will be faithful to the end. But you've got to keep your eyes here. I'm pulling you. Stop looking around. If we start looking left and right and we start following other things except our deliverer, we will retard our deliverance. In fact, we can go beyond that. We can actually walk back into slavery of our own free will. Egypt had no right to Israel, but they're ready to go back to Israel. Psalm 121 says, I lift up my eyes to the mountains. This is when he's panicking. Where's my help going to come from? The mountains? No. My help comes from the Lord who made the mountains. He said, I'm going to lift my eyes higher than the earth. I'm going to lift it all the way to the one who made the earth. That's who my help is. In fact, he says he will not allow your foot to slip. When you stay with your eyes fixed on the one who's delivering you, he will pull you through. We got to make sure that we don't get distracted, because when we get distracted, we find ourselves right back into slavery. The path back to slavery, if anybody wants to go, here's how you do it. It starts spiritual, then goes emotional, ends up physical. You ask anybody who's ever fallen off the wagon what happened, and they'll tell you something bad happened in life. An emotional thing kicked them, and they went right back to the same crutch or whatever they want to call it that they've always been in. But what actually happened was something before that. They were spiritually attacked. It led to emotional depression, and then that led back to the addiction. So they go right back into slavery. And when they get there, they say, see, this is what I am. My father smoked for most of his life, and he was a pastor and everything. In the 60s, that wasn't as big a deal. You know, doctors smoked. They'd be sitting there talking to you about medicine smoking. It was weird. I remember taking batting practice, and my little league coach wrapped his arms around me to show me how to choke up on the bat, and there's a cigarette right here dangling. You know, never happened today, but that's how it was back then. But my dad was smoking. Couldn't quit. Just couldn't quit. And then when he turned 50, God challenged him. He was a half a century old. It was time to quit. And so he walked to the middle of Sudersville Bridge. He smoked a pipe at the time. He threw his pipe in the water, and that was it. I said, wow, that was it? You never smoked again? He goes, well, a couple times. I said, well, you said that was it. He said, the difference was, suddenly I was free. And a couple times I smoked in my life after that, I realized I was someone who smoked. I wasn't a smoker going back to smoking. See, I was free. And I wasn't going to buy into the trap anymore. He says, and then after a while, I just didn't want it anymore. And so it's this idea that I'm going to keep my eyes fixed upon the one who saved me and redeemed me and paid for me and is pulling me out of deliverance. That's what I need to do. But if you go the other way, you end up right back into bondage. And we see this with the Israelites. They make themselves an idol, literally an idol. All right? We have idols in our lives, but they literally made one. They made this little golden idol. They start worshiping him. What's the next thing that happens after they start worshiping that idol? They said, we're going to appoint a leader to return us to slavery in Egypt. See, first we end up with idolatry in our lives. We start worshiping something besides God. The next thing you know, we're right back in slavery. Marching back. We want to go back. Why? Why would anybody want to go back to slavery? Well, because we've gone back down the path. We've gone spiritual, emotional. Here we are, right back in slavery. If we want to be free, we have to understand that we have to stay fixed on the one who can free us. If you want to know if you're back in slavery, here's your three triggers. Here's your signals. Fear, discouragement, and coveting. If you wonder, I wonder if I slipped back, just ask yourself, am I afraid? Am I discouraged? Am I looking around left and right wanting other things? If the answer to any one of those is yes, then you are. And usually the answer to all three of them will be yes. You wake up in fear, you won't know what's going on, you'll be afraid all the time, you'll be discouraged, depressed, and then you'll start wanting something. This is a sign that you're walking back into slavery. It's a trouble spot, and what you need to do is you need to take your eyes back off that and say, Lord, I need help. That's why you need to cry out to God. Romans, this is Paul again talking, later tells us this. This is his encouraging word after he depresses us about the other thing. He says, look, all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. For you have not received a spirit of slavery, leading to fear again. See, that's where slavery takes you, back to fear. But you've received a spirit of adoption as sons by which we cry out, Abba, Father. So you're actually being adopted into his family. Now this is significant for a couple of things. I was telling everybody last night, my daughter just recently got back from Jamaica. She had some friends take her. Must be nice. I don't have those good of friends. So she went to Jamaica and I picked her up at the airport and said, how was it? She says, oh, it was nice. I says, nice. Chick, you went to Jamaica. You know what I mean? Nice. And she said, well, I was with their family. I said, well, you know, they could cut you out. No, they're very nice. But I wasn't with my family. And there was this difference there, right? Because I was with their family. I was tagging along. I wasn't with my family. It would have been better if we'd been there, which, hallelujah, I agree with that too. But, you know, it'd be better if we'd been there together. Well, this is what Paul's saying. You're not a tag along. He's adopting you into his family. Adoption. Now, this is really significant to Jews. Let me explain something. Do you know, some of your parents are going to love this, that according to Jewish law, you could divorce your kids? You could. In fact, it was even better than divorce. You could, like, get rid of them. According to Jewish law, this is in the Bible, you can look it up. If according to Jewish law, if you had kids who were grown-ups and they would not obey the father and the mother, they would take them to the elders of the village. And if the elders of the village says, you know, this is right and true, you need to do it, and they still would not obey, they had two choices. And it wasn't the kids, it was the parents' choices. They could either be excommunicated and kicked out, or they could be taken out and stoned to death. How about a big amen for bringing back Jewish law, parents, right? People start obeying. Kids start obeying if you had that. That was Jewish law. You could do that to your own flesh and blood. You can believe that? But you know, you could not do that to someone you adopted. According to Jewish law, you could never, ever turn your back on one you adopted. Ever. God adopted us into his family. So we can call him Abba, which is dad. Literally dad. Dad, father. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not be fearful or dismayed. See, he's not going to forsake you. He made a covenant with you. He will deliver you. He said he would and he will. He's not giving up on you. You giving up on him? Because the only way you end up back in slavery is when you put something else in front of him. As long as you stay focused on him, you will stay where you need to be. Jesus finished his whole thing when he was talking to those Jews by saying this, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. And a slave does not remain in the house. You know, slaves can visit the house, but they don't stay there. But the son does. See, I'm adopting you. You're in the house, and you're in it forever. You remain there because who I set free, he says, is free indeed. Jesus will deliver you. He has a plan. It's a process. Trust him and keep your eyes on your deliverer. Everybody please pray with me.